Welcome back to the CSP Elite Baseball Development Podcast. I'm your host, Eric Cressy, and this is episode 188. I'm going to fly solo for this episode. It's a topic I honestly should have covered quite some time ago, as it's something that we really cover on a daily basis at the facility, kind of out of necessity. Over the course of time, we dealt with so many high school athletes with aspirations of playing college sports, especially baseball, that we kind of learned as trial by fire. Sometimes things didn't work out for players and they wound up transferring or stepping away from baseball. Because we didn't ask some of these questions that I'm going to talk about today. And other times we did ask these questions, and I think it helped to contribute to them having a really positive experience at the school they chose. So lots of important lessons to learn. So hopefully this is beneficial for the young athletes and the parents and the coaches who are listening to this. I also, just in light of the topic, want to give you a heads up that registration is now open for both our collegiate summer programs, one at our Massachusetts facility in Hudson, Massachusetts, and the other one at our Palm Beach Gardens, Florida location. Both of these 10-week programs start on June 3rd and run through August 9th. Really, really good experiences for pitchers that maybe need to take a break from summer ball and work on developing, whether it's putting on 20 pounds, adding some velocity, changing up the pitch mix, developing a slider or a changeup, something to that effect. There's a heavy emphasis on individualized assessment, nutrition, technological interventions, whether that's force plate testing or using the Proteus for rotational power tests, or actually using pitching specific things like Edgetronic and TrackMan. And at our Florida facility, we integrate our Thea markerless motion capture sessions. So opportunities in both places to get live ABs as well. So, for athletes that are trying to decide whether to play or to just develop, this is a nice happy medium between the two where you can get a lot of the developmental work and then mix in some really, kind of good, organized, competitive environments that don't disrupt the continuity of the program. So with that said, the best way to find out more about this is if you're interested in our Florida location, reach out to cspflorida@gmail.com. If you're interested in the Massachusetts location, it's cspmass@gmail.com. Both of these offerings tend to sell out, so I'd encourage you to reach out sooner than later. Average velocity improvement in both dynamics has been 4 miles per hour over the course of the last 4 to 5 years, and we've been running these for an extended period of time with lots of sample sizes to draw from. So again, cspflorida@gmail.com, cspmass@gmail.com, and it runs June 3rd through August 9th. This episode is brought to you by AG1, the most comprehensive NSF-certified for sport daily nutritional supplement I've ever tried. With so many stressors in life, it can be difficult to maintain effective nutritional habits and give our bodies the nutrients they need to thrive. As a father of 3 young kids and a co-founder of multiple businesses in multiple states, on top of still being an avid exerciser, I know that busy schedules can really take their toll on us. Whether it's poor sleep, exercise or life stressors, environmental factors, or simply not eating enough of the right foods, we can often wind up deficient nutritionally. This is where AG1 can really help. It's a game-changing nutritional insurance policy. They simplify the logistics of getting optimal nutrition on a daily basis by giving you just one thing with all the best things. That's why I use it daily, as do several of my family members, and we recommend it to a lot of our top athletes. One scoop of AG1 contains 75 vitamins, minerals, and whole food sourced ingredients that work together to fill the nutritional gaps in your diet to support energy, focus, digestion, and recovery. And this can all happen for less than $3 per day and without taking multiple products. While most nutritional supplements come to market and stay stagnant, AG1 continues to obsessively improve this one holistic formula based on the latest research, producing over 50 improvements in the last decade alone. They invest in the most absorbable and natural source of each ingredient and go above and beyond in third-party testing to ensure their customers continue to receive the highest quality and best-tasting nutrition habit on the planet. Whether you're keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, or gluten-free, it'll work for you, and it contains less than 1 gram of sugar per serving. They put 75 ingredients through the rigorous NSF certification test to come up with a safe formula that's trusted by some of the world's top athletes, including many of our own at Cressy Sports Performance. Right now, AG1 is giving our listeners a special offer of 10 free travel packets with their first purchase. Just head to drinkag1.com/Cressy and claim this special offer. These travel packets are perfect for supporting your immune system, energy, and gut health while you're traveling for games, training, or simply on the go. They can be great counterbalance to the less than ideal on the road food options that are out there for a lot of our traveling baseball players. So if you want to bridge the gap between deficient and optimal and give yourself the best chance of getting nutrient diversity, head to drinkag1.com/Cressy to get 10 free travel packets with your first purchase. Again, that's drinkag1.com/Cressy, C-R-E-S-S-E-Y. You won't regret it. As I mentioned in the intro, this might be the podcast topic that's the most important thing that I could cover. And it's taken me 188 episodes to get here, but I'm glad we did. And the truth is that in spite of the fact that it's really, really important, it's something that I never recognized as essential to my livelihood. You see, when I got into the strength and conditioning field, I always assumed my job would be just about getting athletes bigger, stronger, faster, leaner, healthier, improve performance and reduce the risk of injury. And I think I was, certainly right that those would be constituents of my job, but I failed to realize that there was actually a lot more to consider if I wanted to be successful in the private sector, working with, up and coming baseball players and really all kinds of athletes. So, these unexpected responsibilities, involved everything from interacting to advisors / agents to helping kids plan out their competitive year to just understanding conversation what players meant when they were talking about the MLB collective bargaining agreements. We created a solid physician and physical therapy referral network. And I even jumped in and caught bullpens, did kind of whatever I needed to do to help athletes be successful. But the truth is, none of these tasks could possibly be more important than the interactions I've had with a lot of our high school baseball players and their families as they work to select the right college / university for them. Certainly there are a lot of college advisory services out there, but the truth is that very few of them truly understand the athletic side of things. They're more heavily focused on the academic and social components. There are always great talent evaluators, which is an important part of this. And there's really no way that they can understand truly what each college baseball or football or hockey or basketball or whatever program is doing. We see the coaching staffs change. Universities move to different conferences. There are new facilities and fields that may be added. There are new training methods that are established, and the staff executing those training, methods may move from one university to the next. So certainly these are really important considerations as we look to try to set our athletes up for success. I think the best way that I can illustrate the need to be involved in this world is a story from about 15 years ago. So we started Cressy Sports Performance in 2007. And I'll never forget, one of our most dedicated high school athletes that we ever trained was a guy who started with us around 2008. And he finished up his high school career in 2011 and went off to a great academic Division I program, something that was the apple of everybody's eye and the place that seemed to be an absolutely great fit for him. He's a guy who had been multi-sport athlete, very healthy all the way through high school, absolute innings eater and a total bulldog on the mound. He got to college, and on his first day, his pitching coach handed him a bucket of baseballs and said, "Go throw sliders." And perhaps unsurprisingly, within a few months, he developed elbow pain, and it was clear that he had a UCL injury. It was actually a very challenging diagnosis, something that the team doctor, who was not an elbow specialist, missed. And he actually wound up going to one of the big name orthos nationwide, who said, "Yes, you absolutely need to have a reconstruction." He had what was called a distal UCL injury. And we know that distal injuries don't do well with conservative injuries compared to proximal injuries. So anyway, sports medicine aside, I said, "This is a chance for me to really learn." I was really early in my career. I was trying to get access to as much information as I possibly could. So I said, "Hey, would you mind if I came and sat in on your surgery?" And he said, "Sure." He's like, you guys are family. You've been with me for years. And I wanted to learn, how I could help him in the post-op period. He was one of our first UCL reconstruction. So it was a great opportunity. So I went, I sat in on his surgery, observed the whole thing, saw what went down. And actually, he was an athlete who wound up having some complications after the fact. He developed something called heterotopic ossification, which is a kind of an excessive bone formation that can take place in a certain amount of surgeries. And so I learned a lot in the process of being involved. But the most interesting part of this entire experience that brings me back to this college recruiting and selection process is, as I was driving home from that surgery, I got a call from another athlete who told me that he had just had a sit-down meeting in his home with that same pitching coach who had basically said, "Go throw sliders." And as he sat on that couch next to this kid and his family, he said, "We have never had an arm injury in our program." Okay, so you have to think about this. This is dating back, 13 years. It's not the injury rates that we're seeing in 2024, but it certainly was trending in that direction. It would be, I am absolutely mind-boggling for a college coach to use that as part of a recruiting pitch right now, because everything's very easily trackable. You can see all this stuff on social media very easily. You can recognize how quickly, some teams actually have very, very staggering injury rates. But for someone to go into that home and lie to that family's face just to get a prospect to commit to their university, it told me that I needed to do a better job of being an advocate for our athletes. And that's something that's, I think, been an important part of our messaging to our athletes, is use us as a resource in this regard. And we've certainly had a lot of hard conversations over the years to avoid having athletes, you know, who are duped or feel like they make a decision without all of the correct information. And that's really where this podcast originated. I want to ask a lot of questions that hopefully you can ask yourselves or the programs in question that you're considering to make sure that it's the right fit for you. So with all this in mind, here are 31 questions that I ask all of our kids who approach me about the college recruiting process. So the first question, will you have an opportunity to play right away? And if not, are you comfortable waiting? If you need a great example of, you know, somebody asking this question and making the right decision, go back to our absolute first podcast. Corey Kluber talked about turning down a number of larger universities so that he could go to Stetson and get innings right away. And it obviously worked out great for him. But it's very easy to fall in love with a campus and the thought of playing in front of thousands of fans. But things get real when you've been riding the pine for your first few years of college. You need to look into who are the people on the team that would be playing ahead of you, as well as who else they're recruiting in your class at your position. Now, it's totally fine to go to a big name school and not play nearly as much. Adam Ravenel is one of the best high school baseball players I've ever seen. Adam's now retired, but he was drafted out of high school, didn't sign, went to Vanderbilt, threw 5 innings as a freshman, 17 innings as a sophomore, and then he threw 40 innings as a junior and was a closer on a national championship team. He threw the last pitch of the College World Series when Vanderbilt won their national championship back in 2014. Adam developed a ton. He got an outstanding degree out of it at Vanderbilt, and he was comfortable waiting because he knew there was a lot of development that went with it. A lot of other players would simply not be okay with trading 3 years for 62 competitive innings. So you really have to ask that about, but really, this is also a roundabout way of me asking a young athlete if he really thinks he's good enough to play to school. If you didn't pitch for your high school team, chances are that you're not going to be able to pitch for a Division I program that's going to the College World Series. And in this case, you'd be better off going to a team that's going to provide the innings, the at-bats, whatever it is that you need to develop. And so this can be something for more advanced players to figure out whether it's the right fit for getting innings right away, or for people to really ask some hard questions of themselves: am I actually ready to play at this level? So these are important considerations. From my second question, do you have aspirations of playing baseball after college? You have to ask yourself whether a program that you're choosing is going to facilitate that objective. You know, if it's going to do so, you need to see a track record of players being drafted and signed as free agents. And then also, you know, how do those players do once they actually get to professional baseball? Because we also know that sometimes what works in college baseball may not play at the next level once the talent level is exponentially higher. So one great opportunity to really get more insights on this front is to try to talk to an alumni that may be in professional baseball. This is obviously maybe less of a conversation for your Division III athletes, but something that you might ask if you're looking at a really high level program. Most of those athletes are very, very accessible in one way or another. You can reach out to them on social media or through a mutual friend, but they generally tend to be very accessible. And if you take a recruiting visit to the school, chances are in the off season that there are a lot of their professional players that may be back using their facilities. And it's actually a big red flag if they're a school that has a lot of players that have gone to pro ball, but none of them come back to train at those facilities or have a presence there. That's generally something that speaks volumes about a program, is whether their pro guys come back to train there in the off season. For my third question, have you spoken to alumni who have played at these colleges or for these coaches at different schools? So, you know, this kind of piggybacks on my last question, but do these individuals speak highly of their experiences? Do they rip on the coaches? Do they go back to their college town to visit often? Are they involved with homecoming? Do they donate? These are all really, really important considerations, not just about the baseball program, but about the overall school environment they attended. My fourth question, how would the coaching staff describe their approach to coaching you? These are direct questions you could ask. You know, there are some players who do extremely well with kind of the in-your-face coaching style, radical candor, super, super honest and direct feedback. And let's be real, there are some players who simply can't handle that. They struggle with these regular confrontations, and, you know, they need to hear a lot more praise before they can get some of that more challenging feedback. So I think you need to understand yourself in order to ask this question, but I think it displays a level of maturity that a lot of college coaches would like to hear. Number five, what is the program's track record of success with developing players like you? You know, will they make you a better version of yourself? Are they going to try to overhaul you into something markedly different? Do they have examples of players like you who have come in and thrived, right? If you're a second baseman, do they have a second baseman that's come in and gotten so much more athletic there that all of a sudden playing short and third was something that you became an offering for them that made it more appealing in professional baseball? Or was it that second baseman came in, they said, hey, his arm's not good enough, he needs to stay there. I think it tells you a lot when you see players become more versatile, helping the program in different ways and just taking a huge step forward. So I think it's totally fine for you to ask for examples of their track record of success. Number six, how does this coaching staff embrace or refute the use of technology? This is something I wouldn't have thought to ask 7 or 8 years ago, but now it's vitally important. And I actually would really encourage you to listen to Jason Jackson's podcast. He's the pitching coach at Alabama. Was a wonderful guest, and he talked about a number of different things. But you know, one of his points was that players are more schooled in the use of tech than ever before. They're coming in with much more awareness of who they are, what they can do. And that can be really, really frustrating for a player if they go to a university where they feel like they know more than the pitching coach, or that university doesn't have access to the tech that they were using in the private sector or in high school. And at the other end of the spectrum, we may have athletes who really struggle to handle tech. They may get overwhelmed by it, too much data, too much information. And, you know, coaching staffs may push that on athletes who actually want them to dumb it down for them because they don't want to get too analytical when they're trying to be competitive. So where that use of technology falls relative to your goals, your needs, your experiences is a really, really important question that you should ask. Number seven, in the era of, you know, name, image, likeness deals and this transfer portal, you have to ask, how have they turned the roster over in the past few years? Have these been wholesale changes where, you know, 50% of the roster leaves, or have these been subtle adjustments where one or two guys moves on and the rest of it remains intact? I think as an extension of this, like, they're still trying to feel out what the roster size is. Are these massive rosters where you're seeing, you know, 70 guys out there in the fall and they're paring it down later and a bunch of people are up a creek without a paddle? Or is this, you know, a little bit more of a condensed roster that you know what you're getting? I think that's a really, really important consideration with how transient the Allegiant is in college, you know, sports right now. Number eight, what, if any, scholarship or financial aid amount are you being offered? I think we all know college isn't cheap. It's getting much, much more expensive. And full rides are incredibly rare in college baseball. But in spite of that, the difference between 25% scholarship and a 50% scholarship can work out to, you know, $100,000 over the course of 4 years, potentially even more. And that doesn't even include transportation costs to and from campus several times per year. All the other things that might go into actually paying for college sometimes get overlooked. So, you know, for some people, staying in state is a massive cost savings. And if there's a great baseball school that also has your academic fit, it could be an amazing way to save money and obviously set yourself up for future financial success and not dig the hole too deep. So those are all really honest questions that you have that play into the discussion. The other thing that I would ask is maybe a piggyback question, 8A, is have these schools honored scholarships and players who get hurt, right? If you're a shortstop and you fracture your femur on your first week on campus and you were banking on going to this school because you had significant financial aid and that's an injury that may actually cost you a couple of years, are they going to honor that scholarship or are they going to kick you to the curb afterwards? And do they have examples of what happens in these situations? Number nine, how tenured are the coaches and do they see themselves leaving the school in the next few years? Just like baseball players want to get better and, you know, be compensated more and play on winning teams and all that, coaches have career advancement mindsets, and there's nothing wrong with that. You know, at the Division I level, while you have some wiggle room usually in leaving a school, if the head coach that recruited you leaves, you don't always get that luxury with respect to pitching and hitting coaches. So, you know, I think more and more, we're probably seeing more flexibility on the behalf of the athlete where, you know, they can decommit and do some different things here. And that's certainly changed over the course of time, and the rules regarding it may be adjusted. But I think it is important for you to recognize that if you plan everything out and your coach decides to leave a week before you go to campus, there may not be a spot waiting for you somewhere else. And it's a tricky dynamic if that coach wants to take you with them. So you really need to ask questions about whether that coach that you really like anticipates staying at the university for an extended period of time. Have they interviewed for other positions? Ask questions that they can't sidestep. Number 10, how tenured is the team's athletic trainer and what is his or her approach to treatment? So I think we have, you know, athletic trainers that may be graduate assistants in their first year that have never seen a baseball player before. And we have others that have been at that university for 15, 20 years and spent a lot of time with that team and really know a lot more. So we have, you know, some people that tend to stay out of the way. You know, we have other people that get really involved with manual therapy, individualized rehab programs. Those are really important considerations. You don't want to play for a program where the athletic trainer is kind of an afterthought. And it leads to my next question, which is, if a player gets injured and needs rehabilitation, do they rehab on campus with an athletic trainer? Do they rehab on campus with a physical therapist? Do they rehab off campus with a physical therapist? And if so, is it paid for by the college? Is it paid off the athlete's private insurance? Those are really, really important considerations. If you go to school and you blow out your elbow and you go and you have a reconstruction with a really qualified surgeon, you don't want just anybody rehabbing you, right? You want someone who has experience doing a lot of Tommy John rehabs and can speak to the norms and it's not going to push you at the wrong times or, you know, not push you when you do need to be pushed. I think that's really, really important consideration that no one ever thinks about. Number 12, similar vein, how tenured is the team's strength and conditioning coach and what is his or her approach to training both in the in-season and the off-season? You know, the question you have to ask is, do guys get bigger and stronger over their 4 years? Do they just run poles and waste away? Can you watch a lift? Is that person a respected figure in that player's lives, right? Is he or she considered a true part of the coaching staff to really allow for good synergy? Or does the head coach never interact with that strength coach? Ask about how the strength coach and the athletic trainer and the hitting and the pitching and the head coaches all communicate. You know, when you watch that lift, are the players on unique programs based on their positions, their injury history, their movement capacities, and, you know, what their screens say? Or is everybody doing the same thing? I think one program on a dry erase board doesn't really bode well for long-term individualized success. I'm a little bit biased because that's how we employ things. And it might be a scenario where you can get away with a little bit less individualization early in a college career. But by the time you're a junior and a senior, if you're doing the same program that the freshmen are doing, you're missing out a lot of adaptation that's really, really important.
We interrupt this podcast with a quick reminder that this episode is brought to you by AG1. It's an NSF-certified all-in-one superfood supplement that features 75 whole food-sourced ingredients designed to support your body's nutritional needs. I use this product daily myself, and a ton of our athletes do as well. Head to drinkag1.com/Cressy and claim my special offer of 10 free travel packets with your first purchase. AG1 gives you peace of mind that you're covering all your nutritional bases. Again, that's drinkag1.com/Cressy, C-R-E-S-S-E-Y, and you'll get that special offer.
Number 13, how successful are the coaches in placing players with competitive, well-managed summer teams, right? Sadly, summer baseball becomes less and less developmental every year. It's one reason why we've started our summer development programs at our facilities in Florida and Massachusetts. But fortunately, there are still some good summer coaches out there. And you want to make sure that your coaches are really pounding the pavement to help place you with those coaches. Obviously, everybody wants to go play on the Cape, and that's a tremendous place to be if you can get there. But what you don't want to do is get put in the middle of nowhere with an underwhelming host family with no car that's 45 minutes away from the nearest gym and the food isn't good. That's a path to having a summer where you waste away, lose 15 pounds and come back worse than when you left. You want to make sure that you ask good questions about their ability to place you in great environments where you can actually develop. Number 14, and this piggybacks on some of the Jason Jackson comments from earlier, how do the coaches feel about communication with the private sector? You know, more often than not, when a player comes to college now because of the surge in private sector, you know, facility availability, players have their guys, right? More often than not. Will those voices be considered in the developmental process, right? Like, I try to stay out of the way unless a player really asked me to get involved or, you know, have an existing relationship with the coach. But there are players that do lean really heavily on people who have helped them, whether it's a high school coach or a private sector coach before they got there. And you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You want to leverage previous learning experiences so that you don't have to make the same mistake twice. So you want to make sure those coaches embrace the private sector. You know, I'm looking at my phone. I'm recording this at 3:38 p.m. right now, and I've actually texted with two separate college coaches already today who are great people that I really respect. So you want a coach that's good with their outreach, just because it's a sign that person's open-minded and looking for different places to learn. And, you know, if they're smart, they're also understanding that that's a great recruiting offering that can really help them to build better rosters down the road. Number 15, how are the facilities? Will there be any construction going on during your college experience? If they're building a new field, you might be playing elsewhere for your home games. New weight room, you might be pushing cars in the parking lot in the middle of winter. It could be a lot of different things. What I will tell you as someone who's done several facility renovations over the years, they always take much, much longer and cost a lot more than you could imagine. So if they're promising that they'll be done by your freshman year, you might not get in there until your sophomore year. That's just the nature of renovations. But you want to know whether those pristine facilities that, you know, were promised you on your recruiting visit are in fact going to be there. You have to ask, what's a program's track record in terms of injury rates? Are they blowing out arms left and right, or are guys avoiding surgery, while pitching more effectively than ever? You have to be very, very calculated in how you look at this stuff, because, you know, certainly there are people that will skew everything and they'll always try to blame the athlete for it instead of the program. But these are really, really important questions for you to ask. Building on this, my 17th question is, what were starting pitchers' pitch counts over the past year? You have to ask, are they consistently sending guys out there for over 120 pitches? You know, there are some good trackers online. I think more often than not, people are being held accountable for this when they do this stuff. But I'm looking back at a current major league pitcher who blew out while in college. His pitch counts starting in early April were 112, 99, 110, 101, 101, 107, 126, 120, 104, 38, in a weird one, and then 117. And then he came out and his first documented outing of the following year was 114, at which time he blew out his elbow and missed a considerable chunk of time and presumably a lot of money in the draft. So if you see trends like this, that's a pretty good sign that things aren't good. I have mixed feelings about when I hear about a player coming out and throwing 140 pitches in the College World Series, knowing they've maybe been on a 7-day rotation. And for some of those players, it might be the absolute end of their career anyway. But when you see a really big time prospect going out there and consistently throwing 120 plus pitches, you know, on games in the middle of the regular season, it speaks to me that this is a coach that does not have a long-term plan in mind. And that's not somewhere where I would want our athletes to go. Shifting gears, number 18, how tough of an adjustment socially will it be for you? You know, if you're a New Englander who heads to the deep South, it's going to be an adjustment, right? But the adjustment's going to be just as challenging if you're somebody from, you know, Florida who's going up to Massachusetts for a winter. It's going to be an entirely different weather scene and certainly a new social scene at the same time, you know, as a new coaching staff can really overwhelm some guys where there just may be societal differences in those places. Number 19, do they have the academic programs you want? Really, this should be question number one for absolutely everybody. But, you know, I hate to burst your bubble, but only 2% of guys drafted actually make it to the big leagues. That percentage kind of skewed in different directions depending on the year and how big the draft is. But that essentially works out to, you know, a very, very small percentage that actually get there, but even fewer that actually get there long enough to be financially successful for life. So there's a 99.99% chance you're going to be employed in some capacity after baseball. So you need to prepare for it. And regardless of what our guys opt to study, I always tell them, take some finance courses, you know, understand how to write, how to read. Those are all very, very important things, as everyone's going to have to understand how to do these things, manage money and read and write. I think we often, you know, look for green grass and pretty girls and, you know, flashy tech and amazing sold out stadiums. But at the end of the day, we should probably be looking at the academic side of things first. Building on that for my 20th question, do they have a solid academic support staff in place if you need it? If you have an athlete who may have a learning disability that warrants special assistance, do you have someone that needs organized study halls to help with getting your work done? Or are you someone who's super self-sufficient and you just want everybody to stay out of your way and you don't like it to be as regimented where they dictate how you study? Those are really important to consider. Number 21, what's the alumni network like? Will it help you to get internships or employment after you graduate? Or are you going to have to, you know, scoot down the road and interview, you know, the alums at the local prison? And I'm saying that facetiously, but we do know that, you know, the Ivy League tends to have an incredible alumni network. You see that a lot with some of the NESCAC schools up in the Northeast. You know, these people all kind of watch out for each other. Number 22 is the coaching staff get out and attend different conferences to improve with their craft. You know, are they teaching the same things that they were doing back in the late 70s? Or are you being introduced to more forward-thinking concepts? New is not always better, but you have to ask these questions. It gives them a chance to, you know, provide rationale for their methods, speak to how they're doing things differently now than they were 5 years ago, and what lessons they've learned along the way. I think that's a great question for a college coach is, what's something that you did in the past that you realized was wrong and you're no longer doing? Number 23, are the hitting and pitching coaches more hands-off, or do they want to start tinkering with mechanics to solve problems they already see with your swing slash delivery? You know, I think we can all agree college coaches always see more things that need to be addressed than high school coaches ever can. You know, this is their full-time job. It's what they do. They get more hours with you. They see you against better competition that may expose your weaknesses more. These weaknesses obviously need to be addressed, but how much will you be abandoning the horse that got you there in the first place? Is it going to be a tinkering? Is it going to be an overhauling? And what are you willing to commit to? But I think above all else, and this was actually a lesson Kevin Raminio taught me, who was a longtime pitching coach at Kennesaw State. You know, he always said that part of every recruiting pitch was that I sit down and I map out what our plan for them is over the, you know, 3 to 4 years that follow. I want to make sure that they know what's right from a pitching standpoint, what's right from a strength and conditioning standpoint, what our sports medicine department can prepare. So ask them for what their plan will be for you. This is what we want. We have to do often in, you know, major league and minor league free agency and the pro side of things. You know, you want to know, can they put their best foot forward with a developmental plan that's the right fit for you? Number 24, how's the food on campus? Rule of thumb, as someone who went to a few different colleges in my time, the food always tastes good for the first month, and then a lot of people get sick of it. So don't be one of those people because you didn't ask the right questions. Go and make sure there's some variety. Talk to other people who have eaten consistently in those cafeterias. Number 25, who's the team doctor? What's his background or her background and accessibility? If you're there 4 years, chances are you're going to roll an ankle or get hit by a pitch or have some elbow pain at one point or another. You want to know if a team doctor is readily accessible, or do you have to book an appointment and then wait 3 weeks to see that doctor? You know, in the baseball world, we're extra meticulous about making sure someone has a solid understanding of the management of overhead throwing athletes. Many doctors don't. And, you know, we're fortunate where, you know, if you're at Troy, Dr. Jeff Dugas is going to be your team doctor. You know, if you're at Columbia, you've got Dr. Chris Ahmad right down the road. Like, these are amazing resources for certain programs. Not everybody is geographically equipped to just go down the street to one of the best orthos in the country. So you want to ask questions about, how do I get access to some of this expertise if I do get into trouble? Number 26, how competitive is the conference in which you play? If you can go out and hit 500 or have a zero ERA as a freshman, you're probably not being challenged quite enough. And I'm a big believer that the success is in the struggle. So you want to go out and chase opportunities to compete against really good competition. Number 27, have you watched this team play a game and practice? You know, does the team go through a thorough warm-up, or do they just roll in, do 10 seconds of arm circles, and then get to it? Do the players look the coaches in the eye when they're being coached? Do players cheer in the dugout, or is it completely silent? Do you see coaches absolutely eviscerating players in front of teammates? You know, I had one college kid who is now retired, as is the coach. He said, hey, I had a head coach that didn't show up for a single fall practice. The assistant coach ran the entire thing. Like, that absolutely can't happen. When that head coach didn't show up in the fall and they're making up the lineup card in the first day of the spring, that's a big deal. And I think last but not least, have you spent time with this team socially on a recruiting visit? You know, were they troublemakers or on the right track? I'll never forget, we had a kid that went on a recruiting visit and he saw other kids on the team doing cocaine on his visit, and he called it, left early, and never talked to the school again. It was stopped dead in its tracks. But unfortunately, these are some of the things that are out there. And I'd never heard about that school, but it always comes to mind immediately when I see that. So understanding what the priorities of the other players on the team is really important, because you could love everything about it, but if you're rolling with the wrong crowd, it's not going to be a good experience. Number 28, what kind of throwing programs and pitch selection does a team use? You know, if you're a big long toss guy, you probably want to go somewhere that actually believes in long toss. If you've done great with weighted balls, don't go somewhere that vilifies weighted balls in their throwing programs. These are really, really important. You know, and likewise, if you're a guy that has a history of elbow pain, don't go to a school where all the pitchers, you know, throw the sliders 90% of the time and roll out there for 115 pitches each week. It's probably not going to work. You've got to match what's worked for you and your individual needs up to what a coaching staff or a program is consistent with doing. Number 29, what's a team's graduation rate? And that's something that can definitely be impacted by a number of factors, including how many guys are drafted, but don't return right away to do their degrees. And actually, as an interesting, scary fact, a while back, only 4.3% of those who have played in the big leagues had a college degree, which I thought was fascinating. I didn't realize it was that low. Still, graduation rates are something that you should ask about, because a question that gives a coach a chance to show you what kind of emphasis he places on academics. I really do believe that. Number 30, you know, I hit on it a little bit earlier when I talked about the social aspect of being in a different part of the world, but what are winters like? You know, I went to do my graduate degree at the University of Connecticut. It's an absolute wind tunnel. We consistently had wind chill well into the negatives. It was about as cold as you could possibly get when we were going to, you know, 6 a.m. conditioning sessions. That's something that they never experienced at the University of Miami or University of Texas or any of those places. And if you're coming from the South and going North, it could be totally different for you and something you're not really equipped for. And then last but not least, number 31, how have things gone south with other players here who have struggled? I think that's sometimes a really good question. I remember when I was doing a contract a while back, a mentor of mine once said to me, let's stew on this for 24 hours and think about all the ways that this can go wrong for both of us. And I thought that was an absolutely awesome recommendation. And I think it's something that, you know, it gives rise to this question. There's nothing wrong with saying, hey, when you've had someone who's come here in the past and it didn't work out, what were the reasons why it didn't work out? And sometimes it might just be that, hey, we didn't have innings for them and we mutually parted ways and it was very cordial and everybody went their different directions and I'm cheering them on from afar. And that's a great answer. But, you know, my coaching style didn't align with their learning style or that kid was an idiot. When you see coaches who consistently cast blame on the players, that's something that, you know, should be a red flag for you. Whereas if it, you know, it's, hey, I could have done a better job with this, or it just wasn't the right fit, but we thought the world of him. Those are the answers that you want to hear. You know, in typing this up, I really rattled all these questions off in probably under 10 or 15 minutes, but the truth is that there are a lot more. You know, the set of questions that you're going to ask is going to be unique to your situation. And the only commonality I think is that the kids should really ask a lot of these questions. You know, parents can ask some of them, but I think it's vitally important for the young players, you know, the recruits to ask these questions so that they can be advocates for themselves over the next 3 to 4 years. And I think it's also important as an addendum that you realize that there isn't a single program in the country that's going to give you the exact perfect answer you want on all these questions. Your goal is to find the best fit, not the perfect fit. And if you spend a whole lot of time looking for perfect when great is right in front of you, you're going to miss out. Remember though, that you are committing to the program as a whole, not just the parts of which you approve. So to that end, you're going to need to prioritize certain things depending on your circumstance. If money is really tight in your family, the scholarship and financial aid piece, that question might be the most important one that you ask. If you have a history of injuries, the athletic trainer, strength and conditioning coach, and team doctor questions might be super pertinent for you. If your goal is to play baseball in college, but not beyond, the question about graduation rates and alumni networks, that might be the most significant for you. If you've got a really weird delivery that's worked well for you and you're afraid of a pitching coach that will change it, you need to ask those pitching coaches if they're open-minded to that arrangement. This is actually what made, I think, Tim Lincecum, you know, his scenario kind of well talked about as he went to the University of Washington. He chose that school in part because they're willing to embrace his unique delivery and not mess with it. But the truth is, at the end of the day, there's no right or wrong answers, but there are definitely a lot of questions that you should ask along the way. And one friendly suggestion I make to players is to make sure that these questions come from you and not just your parents. Parents will have questions of their own, but I have to reiterate, they should never dominate the conversation. Young athletes need to take a proactive role in learning about what could be their life for, you know, 4 years. It not only shows maturity to the coaches that are recruiting you, but it also makes sure that you get the answers to the questions that are most important to you. And as I wrap this up, I do want to just refer you to a few more resources. We've had some awesome college coaches on as guests on this podcast. They're wonderful listens. Tim Corbin from Vanderbilt, Chris Pollard from Duke, Matt Hobbs from Arkansas, Butch Thompson at Auburn, Mike Gambino, formerly Boston College, now at Penn State, Jason Jackson at Alabama, Sean Cole out in San Diego State, Dusty Blake, formerly of Duke, who's now with the Cardinals. And then Walter Beattie has done a great job, you know, making himself available on social media and through podcasts with a lot of advice about the college recruiting process. So his podcast here was absolutely excellent and one of our most downloaded ever. So definitely check these resources out. And by all means, if you have questions as follow up, you can always, you know, fire us an email at elitebaseballpodcast@gmail.com or, you know, tweet at us, comment on Instagram. But these are really, really important questions, and I hope you found them beneficial. And they've served a lot of our athletes well over the years. Thanks so much for tuning in to the CSP Elite Baseball Development Podcast. We really appreciate you carving out some time in your schedule to listen, not just to this episode, but also to some of the episodes from our archives. If you enjoy what you heard, we'd love it if you'd share it with friends, colleagues, and teammates, as well as leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Thanks again for your time.